Well, this is Brian Trumbore of StocksNews.com. And this is going to be our week in review for the week ending October 3rd. Today is October 4th. And I'd like to start out with a quote from FDR from May 22nd, 1932, as he was on the campaign trail about 2.5 years into the Great Depression. FDR said, "The country needs, and unless I mistake its temper, the country demands bold, persistent experimentation. It is common sense to take a method and try it. If it fails, admit it frankly and try another one. But above all, try something." Commentator Ben Stein wrote in the New York Times recently, "Imagine, if you will, that a man who had much to do with creating the present credit crisis now says he is the man to fix this giant problem, and that his work is so important that he will need $1 trillion or so of your money. Then add that this man thinks he is so indispensable that he wants Congress to forbid any judicial or administrative questioning of anything he does with your dollars. You might think of a latter-day Lenin or Fidel Castro, but you would be far afield. Instead, you should be thinking of Treasury Secretary Henry M. Paulson, Jr., and the rapidly disintegrating United States of America right here and now." That was Ben Stein. Peter Bernstein, one of the better economic historians around, also wrote in the New York Times recently, "We could refuse to bail out the risk-takers and letting the financial miscreants squirm in their own juice. That might provide satisfaction to moralists, but life is not so simple. An epidemic of unpaid bad debts would devastate lenders and ignite a conflagration that could pull down the economic and financial structure, ruining everybody. We were on the verge of such an outcome in the last few weeks, as banks froze up in fear that every piece of paper was tainted. As a result, they refused to enter into the most routine kinds of transactions with one another. The choice is between two cruel outcomes, the high probability of an irreparably damaged financial system, or an overload of moral hazard. I prefer dealing with moral hazard later. Preserving the system and society must now have top priority." That was Peter Bernstein. An editorial in the Wall Street Journal this week: "The Paulson plan isn't what we would have drawn up. It will not by itself inject capital into troubled banks, and it carries risk in how Treasury will price toxic assets when it buys them, but is one more policy tool at a time when something needs to be done. And it is the only one currently up for a vote. Passing it won't by itself revive the banking system, but defeating it will guarantee far more damage to far more Americans." Well, as you know by now, the Senate passed the rescue plan by a 74-25 vote. And then on Friday, in dramatic fashion, the House approved it 263-171. I wrote myself in my week in review of 9/13, quote, "I long predicted the recession for 2008 specifically, though I said as measured by the GDP figures it would be mild. But there is a fine line between recession and depression, and there are times it feels as if we're uncomfortably close to the latter," close quote. Friends, what we are facing is not just a credit crunch, but a crisis in confidence, and both are global. A hotel manager, upon learning his government had bailed out the third leading bank in his nation, told Bloomberg News, "Nobody trusts anyone anymore, and in banking, trust is everything. As long as people trust you, you can build a very long domino chain. But once that trust is gone, things start falling." Where was this gentleman, Arne Einarsson, from? Iceland. Yes, the crisis that started in America was the beginning of a very long domino chain. And if you thought banks in the U.S. didn't trust each other, imagine what is unfolding in Europe. Albert Kyle, a finance professor at the University of Maryland, best summed it up in a piece by Neil Irwin of the Washington Post. "Does an Italian bank trust a Spanish bank? Not as much as a U.S. bank trust another U.S. bank." An Icelander said of the banking industry in his country, though he could have just as easily been talking of the industry in the U.S. and elsewhere as well, they thought they could sit around inside all their buildings and keep on generating money on their computers. In the end, it is still hard work and diligence that creates value. Or, as I concluded myself in my column of September 20, on a number of levels, it's time to get back to basics. Yes, this crisis we're going through is global. And if you thought the recent actions of the Federal Reserve, Treasury Department, and SEC were ad hoc, consider how in the European Union, it was every country for themselves. Take Ireland, which had a true crisis on Monday in its banking sector. Shares in same totally collapsed as depositors fled in droves amidst rumors of insolvency. The next day, the government was forced to propose to guarantee all deposits on six banks, as well as underwriting loans and debts for a fee for 2 years. Ironically, this negatively impacted most British banks because British bank customers thought, hey, I'll shift my assets to an Irish bank and gain better insurance on my deposits. Britain, this week, also had to seize and nationalize the lender Bradford and Bingley. Earlier in the year, it was Northern Rock, you might recall. Belgium, Dutch banking giant Fortis was saved by those two countries plus Luxembourg. Dexia, the world's biggest lender to local governments, was bailed out by Belgium and France. The second largest real estate lender in Germany received a government guarantee of its own. And in Asia, markets shuttered, and the economic news from Japan and China continued to worsen. When it comes to the economy, back here in the States, the news this week was dreadful. A key reading on manufacturing, the September ISM data, Institute of Supply Management, came in at 43.5, with 50.0 being the line between growth and recession. Factory orders for August were down a whopping 4%. Unemployment, the weekly jobless claims data, continues to deteriorate and is now at 497,000, just 3,000 shy of what would be a very awful headline-grabbing figure. And, of course, you have the September non-farm payrolls number, down 159,000, the ninth straight month of declines in the labor market. Then there's real estate. Short term, like the next few weeks, the story is about the global credit crisis. Medium and long term, the next 1 to 12 months, it's still about the housing industry. This week, we saw the latest S&P Case-Shiller data for July, and the 20 city index revealed home values had declined 16% over a year ago, with losses of 30% in Las Vegas and 29% in Phoenix, according to their work. But the silver lining, to stretch a bit, is the fact the speed of decline is slowing. I maintain we'll hit bottom early next year, call it April, May, but as I've said for years, when we do hit bottom, we'll just sit there. But here we face a bigger problem. When the credit spigot is turned back on, and we all hope that's soon, what incentive is there for a lender to grant a mortgage when real estate values are still going down? And now that the rescue package has cleared, how do you get the banks to lend to each other, let alone to the small business owner? I'm not going to spend time this week dissecting the package that Congress passed. It's not necessarily a $700 billion-plus plan, for starters. We have no idea just how big or small it could end up being. Nor am I going to spend much time in this forum delving into the past. I've only covered the main issues every single week for almost 10 years at this point in Week in Review. We know how we got into this mess. It's the fault of both Wall Street and Maine. I do have to say, however, that of all the ideas that were floated on the rescue plan, I like the idea of injecting capital into the banks first, which got me to thinking about leadership and President Lyndon Johnson and how this would have been a perfect moment for him. It's one thing to have the skills of an FDR or JFK or the leadership provided by Ronald Reagan. It's another to inject the banks with capital and then gather the banking heads at the White House and have an LBJ jack them up against the wall and boom, listen, I just bailed your asses out. Now, no one is asking you to go back to doing what got us all in this mess, lending to those who weren't creditworthy but you start lending to yourselves tomorrow, and then my boys are going to start monitoring your activity runs, and if you don't begin lending to those small businesses and corporations who've been your best clients for years, I'm going to go before the press and start naming names. Now get out of here. And wouldn't you know, that evening, Lyndon would be with Lady Bird in their private quarters, and he'd say, you know, I really showed him good today. I think we solved at least part of this crisis. And Lady Bird would go, that's my Lyndon, buttering him up, because this is what his enormous ego required. I don't know where we go from here. The global economy is rolling over at light speed. And forget businesses not being able to meet payrolls because they can't obtain credit, thus having to lay off their employees. The fundamentals themselves outside of credit are abysmal to begin with. I have been careful in how I parcel out the word depression. We all now know just how close to one we might be, especially if leaders don't step up. But watching from afar, it appears French President Sarkozy, for example, is taking a very active role in steering his nation through the turmoil, and he can at least speak to the issues intelligently. I've seen little of this from our White House, let alone the Treasury or the Federal Reserve. It doesn't help that Chairman Ben Bernanke, Mr. Expert on the Depression, told Congress last year the losses in the subprime crisis would be limited to $50 to $100 billion, and that the damage would be limited to this sector of the mortgage market. Lastly, how many of you believe your children will have it better than you these days? Could be worse, though, I guess. Remember, you could be a Mets fan. And just a few notes on the week just passed in the markets. There was blood on the streets Monday, following House rejection of the rescue package, with the Dow Jones plunging a record 777 points to 10,365. The next day, the Dow rallied 485. But the rest of the week saw wild intraday swings depending on the latest from Congress, as well as the freezing up in the credit markets. And when the House finally followed up on the Senate's revisions and passed the legislation Friday afternoon, the market was like the roller coaster that crested, paused, and then went screaming lower. For the week, the Dow and the other major averages essentially finished where they ended on Monday, with the Dow down 818 points, a sickening 7.3%, and the worst week in more than 6 years. The S&P 500 lost a whopping 9.4% to 1099, essentially where it stood in October of 1998, while NASDAQ declined 10.8%, 236 points to 1947, its lowest weekly close since April of 2005, just to add some perspective. Overall, it was the worst week for the broad averages since the terror attacks of 9/11. One fascinating sidelight to Friday was a situation involving Wachovia, the sixth largest bank in the nation by assets, which earlier in the week, Monday, was acquired by Citigroup in a merger forced by the FDIC. Citi was to absorb some $42 billion of losses out of a $312 billion pool of Wachovia loans, but would leave Wachovia's brokerage and evergreen asset management units independent under the Wachovia umbrella. Wachovia got into trouble by being a lender in option arm mortgages, paper as toxic as Love Canal, to the tune of $122 billion, 58% being in California and 45% of which was thought to eventually default. But Citigroup was picking up Wachovia for $2 a share. Wachovia's stock was at $52 last October. And bondholders weren't totally left high and dry, while as taxpayers supposedly weren't going to have to pony anything up. Well, that was on Monday. On Friday, we learned that Wells Fargo was going to acquire Wachovia for $7 a share in a straight stock deal. So much for Citigroup's agreement in principle. Shares in Citi dropped 17% on the news as it demanded Wells Fargo and Wachovia terminate their $15 billion takeover. Citi has substantial legal rights regarding Wachovia in this transaction, the company said in a statement as it huddled with attorneys. Wachovia's agreement to a transaction with Wells Fargo is in clear breach of an exclusivity agreement between Citi and Wachovia, the statement continued. Well, that's where we stand as I went to post on Saturday morning, with one Citi executive decrying what he saw as a Keystone Cops debacle. Then there was Warren Buffett, who in the past few weeks had picked off Constellation Energy for $4.7 billion and had written a check to Goldman Sachs for $5 billion, with $5 billion more to follow. Buffett decided this wasn't enough and acquired a stake in General Electric for $3 billion, plus again $3 billion to follow, with both GE and Goldman being forced to cough up a 10% coupon for the privilege of having their butts and credibility saved. GE, stumbling because of its exposure to the mortgage market within its GE Capital unit, seemed for a time to be on the verge of bankruptcy before Buffett rushed in as the commercial paper window closed on GE's fingers. Think about that one. Lastly, there has been some unadulterated carnage in the hedge fund industry. And this was a week where clients had to put in redemption requests, their last opportunity to do so before year end. As many of these outfits are nothing more than momentum traders, surprise, surprise, as the funds redeemed their positions and were exposed, we learned, of course, that they were all in the commodities sector across the board. And that's why commodities crashed this week. Finally, just a little look at the credit markets, which, as you know, seized up around the world, as best reflected in the London Interbank Offered Rate, LIBOR, which we're all becoming familiar with these days, and which impacts everything from derivatives contracts to the rates charged on home loans and credit cards, and which normally trades 25 to 50 basis points, 0.25% to 0.5%, over the Fed funds rate, which is currently 2%. On Monday, LIBOR was at a basically normal, for this time, 2.56%, or 56 basis points over Fed funds. But then on Tuesday, as the commercial paper markets froze, LIBOR soared 431 basis points to 6.87%. Friday, one-month LIBOR was back to 4.11%, still far above Monday's level and far above the norm. So that gives you an excellent indication of how things are in the credit markets. While rumors swirled the Federal Reserve would have to act soon and lower its target funds rate 50 basis points to 1.5%, the European Central Bank held the line on its key rate at 4.25%, though ECB President Trichet hinted at future rate cuts and saying the turmoil is damping economic growth and inflation risk have diminished. With markets crashing, it only makes sense that there would be a global coordinated rate cut in the near future. So that's our review for Saturday, October 4th, covering the week September 29th to October 3rd. Hope you enjoyed, and I'll try and get on a regular schedule from here on. Thank you.